chapter 20. Continuing through this study of the book of Genesis, this is message number 21, entitled Dreams of a King. We'll be looking at Genesis chapter 20. We'll start by reading the first three verses. And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country, and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, She is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and said to him, Behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. So chapter 19 gave us the account of the judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah, which, much like the flood in Noah's day before it, provides a pattern and an example of God's judgment on sin that recurs throughout the Bible. And through Abraham's intercession, Lot was spared. He was delivered from Sodom and delivered from the judgment of God that fell. Now, Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain were full of wickedness and unnatural perversions within those cities. And they are prime examples of what Paul was describing in Romans chapter 1 that brings the righteous wrath of God from heaven upon men. Well, Lot's deliverance is also was also clearly accomplished by God's mercy and by God's grace. In other words, it wasn't due to Lot's merit. It certainly wasn't his works or anything that he had done. And the chapter and the whole incident there in Sodom and Gomorrah emphasizes that God is the judge of all the earth and that he's always righteous in his judgments. He's righteous in judging Sodom and Gomorrah. He's righteous in keeping his covenant with Noah and mankind to not destroy all life on the earth with a global flood again, even though men and women on the earth are no better than they were in those days. And here's another proof of that in the cities of the plain with Sodom and Gomorrah. He's also righteous to bless and to curse nations of the earth through Abraham. He's righteous to choose Abraham, to bless him as he promised to do. So he's righteous in blessing, he's righteous in cursing, he's righteous in judging, and he's righteous in saving. Now chapter 20 continues toward the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham and the birth of the promised seed to Abraham and Sarah. And the time is still within the year that God had told Abraham that they would have a son, but that hasn't occurred yet in this account. And God had promised that Sarah would have the son of promise by Abraham or by the normal means. But the age of them both made this promise impossible. It would require a miracle from God. Now, the writer of Hebrews described Sarah as having received strength to have a child, meaning that God miraculously restored her youth to some extent. He miraculously restored her health, healing whatever it was that had caused her not to have any children before this time. And even though we would look at the birth of Isaac and we would put it in the level of miraculous births in the Bible, and it was, still yet, when that birth came about, all of that conception and birth and everything came about by the normal means. Now, the Genesis account doesn't specify directly how this occurred. But this incident, which takes place right before the chapter with the birth of Isaac, seems to confirm that Sarah's youth had been restored, at least in some measure, because she was about 90 years old when the events in this chapter happened. Now, there are a lot of things that are actually going on in this chapter, but overall, this account continues to show God's faithfulness to Abraham because he had made his promises to him. So we want to look at this chapter in two parts. In verses 1 to 8, we see the cursing that comes upon Abimelech for taking Sarah. And in verses 9 to 18, the blessing that comes on both Abraham and Abimelech for restoring her. So we'll start with the first part and the cursing of Abimelech. This is in the first 8 verses. Let's start here with verses 1 and 2. And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So back in chapter 12, Abraham left the land of Canaan and he went to Egypt because of a famine in Canaan. And here we're simply told that Abraham journeyed without any reason that is given for him making this move. And Abraham by this time was a very wealthy man. He had a substantial household of many, many servants. He had sizable flocks and herds. And so it's reasonable to at least assume that this movement was for the finding of pasture land. And another thing to note here is that he actually did not leave the land of Canaan here. He just merely moved south and sort of west away from Hebron toward the area between Kadesh Barnea and Shur to Gerar, which is the city of the Philistines that was close to the border of Egypt. So Abraham, it says that Sarah is his sister. Now, this, again, is like when he went down to Egypt before and what he told the Pharaoh there. But according to verse number 13, this wasn't something that only happened these two times. Apparently, this was rather the strategy that Abraham had planned to use from the time that he left Ur of the Chaldees. But the result here is the same as it was in Egypt. The king takes Sarah for his harem, or as one of his wives. Let me look at verses 3 to 5. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, she is my sister, and she herself said, he is my brother? In the integrity of my heart and the innocency of my hands have I done this. So we're told that God came to this king Abimelech in a dream at night. Now, this dream does not involve images and symbols. It's not something that he had to seek out some wise man of God in order to interpret to him. But God is speaking to Abimelech directly in this dream. And there's even some dialogue. Apparently, Abimelech in the dream even answers God. And there's a little bit of back and forth between them. And so this dream, when we look at what takes place here, this dream gives revelation and also gives a warning to Abimelech. See, Abimelech is in danger of judgment because he has taken another man's wife. He has taken the wife of Abraham. Now, we're told in the account here that nothing had happened between them. She had come to his house, but nothing had happened between the two of them. And Abimelech here is pleading his innocency. In other words, he's protesting that both Abraham and Sarah had claimed to be brother and sister. That he had not, in other words, he had not done this with the intention of stealing a man's wife, or with the intention of committing what amounted to adultery. And it's actually interesting that in many of the archaeological studies and data that we have from ancient civilizations in this time period and in this area, that it was quite common in that part of the world for there to be laws in these nations against adultery, that to be seen as a crime, something that ought not to be done, even something in many cases, even in pagan nations, which was seen as an affront to the gods and something that was very sort of off limits to do, you might say, a very great sin in their estimation. And certainly the reaction of Abimelech here would certainly support that, that even in that nation and that culture, that was seen to be something that was wrong to do. So he is protesting that he has he had a clear conscience in the matter that that was not his intention, and acting on what both Abraham and Sarah had told him, he did not know that that is in fact what was going on. All right, so let's look at verses 6-8. And God said unto him in a dream, Yea, I know that thou did this in the integrity of thy heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her. Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, and all that are thine. Therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning, and called all his servants, and told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. So now God responds to Abimelech in this dream. And again, it's just very direct speech. God appears in the dream. He's speaking. Abimelech answers. There's back and forth. And obviously when Abimelech wakes the next morning, he's fully cognizant of what took place in this dream. But he responds to Abimelech, and he reveals here that he knew Abimelech's thoughts. When he talks about him acting in the integrity of his heart, in today's term, we might say with a clean conscience. In other words, that he wasn't knowingly or intending to do what God had said against him. But God also is revealing here that he had intervened to prevent anything from happening between them. Now, we're not given details about that, how that came about, how that worked out. We don't know. But God does say specifically that he has intervened. He has caused Abimelech not to sin against him and to take Sarah to be a wife. So God commands Abimelech here directly to restore Sarah to Abraham. And verse 7 is clearly a central key verse in this chapter and in the account of this incident to understand this record. He says, Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. So first of all, God says here to Abimelech in this dream, very clearly, that Abraham is a prophet. Now, this is the first use of this word for prophet in the book of Genesis. And as we look at the usage throughout the Bible, the word essentially means a spokesman for God. That's what a prophet means, a spokesman for God. And the implication of anyone being so called a prophet is that they have been called and commissioned by God in that office. And so we also find sometimes some of the complaints that God lodged against Israel and against Judah is that they were listening to and following the word of prophets that he never sent. He never called these prophets. He never gave them words to speak. And yet they called themselves prophets, and Judah and Israel were following after them. So a prophet is one that speaks for God in some way, and has been called and commissioned by God to that office. Now that's what we get when we look at this word and we follow throughout the Bible how that it's used and what is spoken of a true prophet and of a false prophet and so on. But here, it is noteworthy that it's not Abraham speaking for God that is emphasized. Abraham is not speaking to Abimelech on behalf of God. No, God is speaking to Abimelech directly by means of coming to him in a dream at night. But what God says is that Abraham will speak to God for Abimelech and his nation. Well, this is what we understand and describe as intercession. He says Abraham is a prophet, and he's going to pray for you to me. Being the implication. Intercession is more of a priestly function, but it is also something that is exercised by the prophets when you study this throughout the Bible. So God makes clear that Abraham is his prophet, and Abimelech will either be cursed or he will be blessed by whether or not he blesses Abraham or curses Abraham in regard to his wife, Sarah. So if he does not restore her, in effect, he's cursing Abraham, and he himself will be cursed. If he does restore Sarah, then he will be blessing Abraham, and he himself will be blessed. Well, the primary point then is that this is, we're still concerned about God's covenant with Abraham as being what is underneath and behind all of these actions and these events. And these events are highlighting how that God is working out his purpose through Abraham. Now, he worked out his purpose. He said to Abimelech very plainly that he intervened. He stopped anything from happening between Abimelech and Sarah. And that was obviously something that we would say which occurred in the normal course of events. In other words, they did not know at the time that God had done that, but he reveals that he had done so. He had intervened. Not only had he intervened, but now he's speaking directly and he is giving commands concerning Abraham and Sarah and Abimelech. So God is faithful to his promises. He is faithful to work out his purposes no matter what might stand in the way. Now, we're told that Abimelech got up early the next morning and told all of his servants about this dream, and they were all terrified. They sprung into action immediately, as it were. Now, this is the first time in Genesis that God has spoken in a dream. Now, we have seen in Genesis to this point, we've seen God speaking, and we're not really told how. We've seen God speaking. We've seen God appearing and speaking. In other words, appearing in some form and speaking. We've seen God speaking in a vision, but this is the first time God speaks in a dream. Now, the Bible does maintain a distinction between a dream and a vision, which might seem to be rather obvious, but nevertheless, it is there. So in chapter 15, God came to Abraham in a vision, we're told. And for part of that vision, Abraham was asleep. But this is not really a normal sleep. So the sleep associated with visions is more of what might be described like a trance-like state that Abraham was in. I think it's described there as a very deep sleep, and we have instances in other places. So it's not the normal sleep that people have regularly. But when God speaks in a dream and spoke in a dream here to Abimelech, it is in the normal course of, you know, his nightly sleep. Now, we might think that God speaking in dreams is a very common occurrence, but that's not actually the case. The Bible records God speaking in dreams, and this is the whole Bible, 21 times. That's all, 21 times. 10 of those times are in the book of Genesis. So right at half of them are in the book of Genesis. One time in the book of Judges, one time in 1 Kings, 3 times in Daniel, and then 6 times in Matthew, and that's it. Now, some of those dreams, when you look at all of them, some of those dreams are actually, just like here, given to unbelievers. And some were given to believers. All of those dreams occurred at some key time, at some key point in the course of God's redemptive plan. And they served some purpose to that end in revealing God's purpose, every one of them. Most of the dreams, in fact, were direct commands. Now, some dreams were symbolic and required interpretation. The dreams of Joseph comes to mind. And then you have the dreams of the baker, you know, like in the prison. And you have Nebuchadnezzar's dreams in the book of Daniel. Some of these dreams were symbolic and required an interpretation. At least half or somewhere around that of these dreams were just simply direct commands. Do this, don't do that, go here, don't go there, sort of thing. All of these dreams also occurred before the completion of the written scriptures. So with Genesis having 10 of these such occurrences, That means that about half all the dreams in the Bible occurred before there was any written scripture at all. Now, God speaking in dreams was one of the ways that God spoke to Israel through the prophets. That's what the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 1, verse number 1. And Numbers chapter 12 and verse 6 confirms that other dream speaking that occurred did occur with the prophets that God had chosen. So in other words, we can find reference in the Bible that God spoke in some other dreams. We're not told the substance of it or all the whens and the wheres and all of that about it. But nevertheless, Numbers chapter 12 and verse 6 would say that this was something that he spoke to his prophets. In other words, to give them revelation that they were to give to the people. Now, we also need to consider the kind of dream speaking by God that we do not read about in the Bible. All right, so all of these dreams that we read about, again, they have occurred at some key point, at some crucial time in God's redemptive plan, and they have served that purpose. Here's the kind of dream in the Bible we don't read about. So this, again, this is fictitious. There was a good man who was a farmer. He was a faithful believer and a servant of God. And he needed to dig a well for his farm. So he prayed about it, and he selected a spot to dig his well. But the night before that he was to dig, God spoke to him in a dream and said, "You are a good and faithful servant with very strong faith, and I know that you need a well. But if you dig on that side of the valley, you'll not get a good well. So dig on the other side of the valley across from the large oak tree, and you will have a good well that will give good water for you and for your children after you." And then the farmer responds and says, "Thank you, God, for showing me where to dig a well. Why did you show this to your servant?" And God responds, "No special reason. Just because you have a lot of faith and believe that anything is possible, I've rewarded you this way. Now go and live happily ever after." That kind of a dream you will not find anywhere in the Bible, though we do find many reports of such dreams today. And I'll let you decide about that. Now, as we proceed in this chapter, verses 9 to 18, the second part, now this is where we get the resolution to this incident, and we have the blessing that comes to Abraham and to Abimelech through him. We'll start here with verses 9 and 10. "Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, 'What hast thou done unto us, and what have I offended thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done.' And Abimelech said unto Abraham, 'What sawest thou that thou hast done this thing?'" So obviously, after that, he had risen up the next morning. He's aware of this dream that he's had, of the word of what God has spoken to him, of the conversation that's taken place. And he addresses his servants immediately early in the morning, and then he calls Abraham. And he questions Abraham, and he's actually rebuking Abraham for what he has done, because he's saying that, you know, you've put me in great danger of judgment here. Verses 11 to 13. "And Abraham said, 'Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God calls me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, This is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me at every place whither we shall come. Say of me, He is my brother.'" So in these verses, Abraham now speaks for the first time that we get actively. Abraham is speaking to Abimelech, and he is giving his reasons, which he has three of them, of why he said that Sarah was his sister, why he said that to Abimelech. Well, the first fear that he mentions, or the first that he mentions, was fear. He was afraid that he would be killed and his wife would be taken. The second that he mentions is that, well, technically, she is my sister. Or more specifically, she is his stepsister. She is the sister of his father, because he's the daughter of his father, but not of his mother. So, you know, technically, I didn't lie, I didn't mislead you, I didn't deceive you. Technically, she is my sister and I am her brother. And then the third reason was that this was the strategy that he adopted at the beginning of his journeyings in strange lands. So when they left out from Ur of the Chaldees, Abraham and Sarah had this conversation that when they come in into these other lands, that they would say that they were brother and sister and not husband and wife because of this very situation. Now, we only read of two instances where this actually happened with Abraham and Sarah, but we would have to take from this that there probably were other instances as well. But why is Abraham telling him this? Well, Abraham is telling him this because, remember, Abimelech has said, why did you do this to us? And what, in essence, saying, what did you see here? Or what did we do that, you know, made you do this to try to bring us into trouble or what have you? And what Abraham is saying is essentially just saying, it's nothing personal. This was my plan, and this has been my consistent plan everywhere I've gone since I left for my father's house, which would have been back in Ur of the Chaldees. So these are the reasons that Abraham gives for saying that Sarah was his sister rather than saying she was his wife. Let me look at verses 14 to 16. And Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants and women servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before thee, dwell where it pleaseth thee. And unto Sarah he said, behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee and with all other. Thus she was reproved. So Abimelech receives Abraham's explanation, and not, you know, obviously it's not that he had a lot of choice in the matter, really. He restores Sarah and he gives many gifts to Abraham, which we would have to understand that this was essentially an effort at a reconciliation. Let there not be any sort of ongoing problem between us. In other words, I think we clearly see Abimelech is acting out of fear. I mean, God has come to him in a dream and has spoke to him, has given him warning. You do this and you're going to live. You don't and you're surely going to die, and all your house and so on. And so he is taking that very seriously. And now he is seeking to reconcile himself to Abraham. He's giving him all of these gifts. He's giving him the best of the land that he would choose for the pasture land. He gives this 1,000 pieces of silver, which I understand would have been the shekels, or somewhere around 25 pounds or so of silver. And according to certain research and calculations that I have seen, it was more than an average laborer in that day could earn from working for more than 150 years. So it was a very, very large sum of money that he gave to Abraham as well. And then we get the conclusion here in verses 17 to 18. So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So then we get to the end of this chapter, and now Abraham does as God said that he would do. He prays to God for Abimelech. And we're told that God heals Abimelech, which we're not given any further description or anything else about that. But he healed Abimelech, healed his wife, and his female servants, his maid servants. Now, most likely, this is referring to actual concubines, because the very next line was, and they bear children after this. Maidservants doesn't always have to mean that, but certainly in this context, it certainly does seem that's what it does mean. It would refer to the concubines of the king. And the explanation is given there in verse number 18 that the Lord had closed the wombs in Abimelech's house. Now, again, we're not given the specifics of how and of what was done and all of that sort of thing, but it was the case, and it was known that it was the case. And it was after that Abraham prayed for Abimelech that all of these things were healed and all of these things were resolved. So, as we look at this chapter, I think first we certainly have to acknowledge that there are failures of Abraham in this chapter. He lied. He showed a weakness in faith. But these faults, once again, are not the point of the account. In other words, this is not an account written to comment on adultery or written to comment on the harems of pagan kings. That's not the purpose of the account. That doesn't mean that the account endorses those things. Certainly not. We know that the Bible does not endorse those things, but that's not the point of the account. And what we see at the end of this is God blessing both Abraham and Abimelech, despite, again, these many failures. We also see here that God spoke to Abimelech in a dream, but that was not because Abimelech was a man of faith, for he was actually an unbelieving Philistine. But the dream that Abimelech had was revelatory. In other words, whenever God speaks, however God speaks, no matter what the means might be, however it is that he communicates with people, making himself known to them, he is giving revelation. And that is what Abimelech received. Now, the point here is that God revealing how he acts to maintain and fulfill his promises. In other words, as we're reading through this chapter, as Israel would be reading the account of these events, we are to understand how that God acts to maintain his promises, to fulfill his promises. He had promised that Abraham and Sarah would have a son. And he'd already overcome many obstacles to that. And here he overcomes yet another obstacle to that by preventing the possibility of a questionable claim of the heir of the covenant. So God's promised seed is preserved. And obviously at this time, Sarah again has had her strength, as the writer of Hebrews said, restored to her, her health and her youthfulness, so that she is able to conceive and to bear a child at this point, even though she's about 90 years old when this takes place. But once again, that promised seed is preserved. And it's not the schemes or strategies of Abraham and Sarah that preserves the seed. It's the actions of God that preserve the seed. So we see the fulfillment also here of God's promises to bless all the nations of the earth through Abraham. And that he's going to bless or he's going to curse those nations according to whether they bless or curse Abraham and his nation. So again, this is a chapter about the faithfulness of God. And that faithfulness of God is independent of Abraham's faults. That doesn't mean that Abraham could do no wrong or that any wrong he did was just swept under the rug. This doesn't mean that Abraham's wrongs are endorsed or condoned in any way. The point, again, is that God's faithfulness is, to put it in theological terms, we'd say it's a unilateral act. In other words, God acts according to his own purpose and will, not according to how good that Abraham and Sarah can be or can do. So in this chapter, we see the sovereignty of God coming out in that God keeps his promises even to intervening in human affairs and even speaking to a pagan king in a dream in order to keep his faithfulness to his word. If you recall just a little while ago in the Sunday school, Steve was talking about how that God is not just a far off, far distant observer of the events of the earth. He is involved. And we see that in a chapter like this. Now, once again, such a chapter is not an excuse to sin, but rather it is a strengthening assurance. So, in other words, we think about the writings of Jude in verses 24 and 25. Now, unto him, that is God, who's able to keep you from falling, and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. To the only wise God, our Savior, be glory and majesty, dominion and power, both now and ever. Amen. In other words, as believers, we read a chapter like this, And we should understand that God is able to keep us. He is able to keep us. Yes, we see Abraham and Sarah stumbling here and there. We see them staggering here and there. We don't see them as being without faults entirely. But nevertheless, God is able to keep you. So God is just to forgive and to cleanse you, and God is faithful. So the message would be, then, trust Him. That's where you put your trust. Not in your ability to figure things out, not in your ability to turn things around, not in your ability to do better next time, but put your trust in God. Confess your sins. Flee from them, we're told. Submit yourself unto Him. God is able to keep you. And He is sovereign and powerful, and He will fulfill all of His promises to us as well as to Abraham and to all of those that believe in Him.